white, Asian stereotype, white, blaxploitation, white, Asian stereotype, white, black stereotype, white.
Talking about young adult literature is not for the faint of heart. There's fashion atrocities, queer subtext, problematic love interests, and that's just for a start. But never fear, because Carrie and Marie are here, and this is Go Your Own YA.
Readers and listeners, welcome to Go Your Own YA. I'm Marie.
And I'm Carrie.
Happy New Year, or if you're magically listening in the past, happy winter solstice.
Happy solstice. I mean, happy new year. Happy something. Anyway, here we are. And Marie, what did we read this week?
We read the book Life is a Movie Starring You, The Pesky Meddling Girl's Guide to Living Your Dreams by Jennifer Brandt. Carrie, how'd you find out about this book?
So back in 2000, around this time, the holiday season, up through the time when selling calendars stops being profitable, I was working at Walden Books. This book was in the YA section, and the problem, of course, with me working at Walden Books or at any bookstore is all I wanted to do was read all the books. And this was one of the ones that I came back to all the time. And during my shelving, I eventually read the whole thing. Now, how did you discover it? I have a hunch.
I discovered it through either the Dangerous Angels mailing list or the Witch Baby mailing list, which moved over from something like E-List to Yahoo Lists at the time.
Oh my god, we're old.
They were both listservs for Francesca Block's writing. One of them was a little more Tumblr-esque, and the other was a little more Facebook. I did belong to both. And I think I know some of the people still that I met on that mailing list. And I definitely followed them from mailing lists to LiveJournal to Tumblr to Facebook to Instagram.
To who somebody, knows what's going to come next.
Somebody recommended this book, and I think that they were also shelving at a Walden Books. However, I ordered mine at Rival B. Dalton.
Ooh, I don't know if we can still be friends. Company loyalty to a company that hired me for 4 months.
And they're both dead.
Yep. Now, you were saying that you still have your copy from those days. And since this book is a workbook, your copy provides some insights into young Marie.
It does. I wrote it in sparkly blue and purple gel pen. And there are some things in here which take me back and some that are basically what I would write if I was filling it out yesterday. And side note, my little kitten, my foster kitten, really loves this book and loves chewing on it. So it has some little teeth marks as well. I don't know, this book above all of the others. So something about it appeals to kittens.
Aw, my dog predictably did not care. I reread it yesterday because a wonderful angel named Marie sent me a copy this year for Saturnalia. I mean, Chalica. One of those things.
Saturchalica.
Saturchalica.
When you're a pagan and also a Unitarian. Hi, new readers and listeners from the Betsy Tacy Society.
You didn't know what you were getting into. We are so glad for the reception that we've gotten from Betsy Tacy fans about our Betsy Tacy Holiday Spectacular. Thank you all so much. Let's talk a little bit about Life is a Movie Starring You, because I'm betting plenty of our readers and listeners were not at Walden Books in 2000 when this was being shelved in the YA section and didn't end up getting to enjoy it. How about you tell us a little bit about this book? It is very near and dear to your heart, I know.
Life is a Movie Starring You is a teen's guide to life written from a kooky, eccentric, old Hollywood-loving bon vivant named Jennifer Brandt, who comes from not only Hollywood culture, but also the Riot Girls. Pesky Meddling Girl was a fanzine that she started as a teenager and used to work her way into the movie and music industries. And at the time, she started like Pesky Meddling Girls Inc. and she was doing all sorts of cool print campaigns and advising on projects. And after this book, she had a column in Elle Girl. She had a clothing line. There was a board game, which I have a copy of.
Oh my God.
And we might have to have a vlog where we play the game.
Yes.
Maybe with friend of the podcast, Lisa.
Yes. I think we'll definitely have to rope her into this. That'll be fun.
Would Tess be in town?
Oh, no, no. She lives in Baltimore.
Gotcha. Okay.
Which is a town, which is a town where I used to live.
It's a town I plan on visiting eventually.
Oh, it's a good place.
Yeah, I keep just ending up on the West Coast. It's easy to go there.
Baltimore is very pesky, meddling friendly.
It truly is from all the descriptions I have heard of it. I have heard amazing things about the Visionary Art Museum.
Yes, that is actually where Tess and her husband and I met for the first time. Four years ago in 6 days from when we are recording this now.
That's so adorable. And yeah, that is so appropriate.
Yes.
Did you guys go to Uncle Fun? Because Uncle Fun, which is one of my favorite places in Chicago, decamped for Baltimore.
Yeah, so it became not really Uncle Fun anymore. It became a store that was kind of like Uncle Fun. And I went there. They were both working that day. So they met me for lunch and then they both had to skedaddle. But I bought many things at fake Uncle Fun. And I'm not even sure if fake Uncle Fun is there anymore.
In New York City, we had a shop called Tapuzi, which is Yiddish for tangerine. And I only got to visit once before it very sadly picked up and moved on to the great novelty store mall in the sky.
Aww. Did you ever get to go to Love Saves the Day?
No.
Or Alphabets. Those were my two favorites in New York, and I think they might both be gone.
Let's see. If it's one of those stores on St. Mark's, I've been to all sorts of iterations of them. I do not have good experiences at most of them because I don't dress like a punk with money.
No, they were very nice to me, and I was definitely not dressed like a punk with money. And I had enemy of the podcast, Gordon, with me, and he definitely doesn't dress like a punk with money.
Oh, sad. No, Love Saves the Day is definitely gone.
Yeah.
We do have a vintage toy shop called Toy Tokyo, which is on First Ave, which looks to have a lot of the same merch.
Ooh.
It's super fun. Definitely worth a visit if you're in New York, and definitely a pesky meddling kind of shop.
Yay. That is good to know. I'm glad there are still some places out there.
Oh, I'm looking at pictures of it. And it makes me really sad that Jennifer Brandt, her other book is Vintage LA, which is a beautifully illustrated and written guide to all sorts of vintage LA hotspots. Like, if you've read Weezy Bat, you need to read it. You need to have a copy. I've never been to LA except for LAX. I don't know how many of those places are still in existence, but I think if you have any love for vintage clothing, vintage shopping, or Los Angeles and old Hollywood, like, definitely get your hands on a copy. It is written with so much love and put together with so much care. I can only say good things about it. And the sad thing is, she was working on Vintage New York, but it never came to be, and there will always be a part of my heart missing it.
Aww. Vintage LA sounds great. I would love to read it because one of the things that I've noticed about LA is that so many things disappear.
As long as Bob Baker's Marionette Theater is there when I visit, I'm good. That's the one thing I need to visit.
I have to go there and spend more time there and be there when I'm not on Beach Boys business. I think, yeah, that'll give me a little more time to do other stuff. Not that there's anything wrong with Beach Boys business. I love it. Bring me more business, Beach Boys.
Life is a Movie Starring You is a book we are covering on today's podcast.
I think it's totally fitting that we are going off in all sorts of eclectic directions because this book certainly does.
It's, oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's so much fun. The premise, as you can tell from the title, is, you know, approach your life as if it were a movie. You are the star. The world around you, your community, your house, your town, that's your setting. Your friends are your co-stars. Your parents are your agents. The music you listen to is the soundtrack. It's a lot of fun. I feel like if I had read it as a teenager, it would have, like, been a lot of pressure for me. Like, oh my God, really? I need to, like, dress for going to school, like, because this is going to be an exciting scene in my movie? Like, where is my leading man? I was already worried that I didn't have one, and now how am I going to make my life movie without him? So you were that age when you read this.
I went to an all-girls school, and I wore a uniform. So a lot of those choices were made for me.
So it was very aspirational.
It was very aspirational. I was very lucky that at the time I had an amazing group of friends, and we definitely made our own fun. Schlimmy Boom is not the most fun town to grow up in, so you have to make your own joy and whimsy and all sorts of fun stuff. And you basically go to the movies and to Applebee's and hang out at friends' houses and rewrite versions of musicals to star you and your friends and bake cakes.
That sounds very similar to Flibbity Flop, which is where I grew up in Maryland. Very, very similar.
We had somebody write R to X-rated fanfic about her main, like her OC, as the kids call it, and some canon characters that no longer exist because the EU was wiped from existence, much like Alderaan. I think we both just saw Star Wars, and we both have a lot of feelings about it.
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh my God!
I know, I'm dying. I'm dying. Hopefully, by the time this podcast is out, I will have seen it. We tend to, like, New Year's has always been, like, a good day to go see movies for me. And sometimes, like, this past year, it's the only time I go to see a movie in the theater.
Mm-hmm. I think Nikki and I are going to go see the P.T. Barnum movie while I'm down in Staten Island.
Ooh, I am intrigued about that one.
I mean, Schlimmity Boom.
Yeah.
I really don't know. There's no secrets about where I grew up or where I live now. I'm trying to keep it a little bit, like, don't hunt me down in my apartment. But, or do, it would make my life a little more interesting, and then I could write into my favorite murder.
Oh, no. You really don't want, you really don't want people. I've been there. Unless it ends up that they become your friends. Sometimes stalkers become friends. It's awesome.
I think that your Beach Boy story is so magical because it's about rivals becoming friends. And when we have a live show, you really need to tell it.
Yes, so it shall be done. If we have a live show, you know, we have discussed doing a live show in Chicago with James and Betsy, and I think it'll just end up being James singing and dancing. Like, none of us are going to get to say anything. James is going to put on a show for himself.
I've been to that show. It's called Taking James to Karaoke.
It's very similar to having brunch with James, except there's more alcohol involved, I imagine, and that makes it more exciting. So we should talk a little bit about some of the things in this book that have not aged as well. We do like to give our readers and listeners content warnings, and there are some things in Life is a Movie Starring You that probably would not fly in a book published today. Of course, I say that, and I just read bits of the book Popular and was really shocked by how much fat shaming made it into the book and how much the girl who wrote the book took the 50s style dieting and food advice and health advice to heart.
I'm really mad at Maya's doctor.
Yeah. I only read up until maybe about halfway through that chapter, and then I was like, nope, nope.
I am really shocked that her parents and her doctor let happen some of the things that happened in that book. And there's so much good in that book that I really hope there's a sequel someday where she experiments with, I don't know, maybe this book, where there's much healthier advice about exercise and how to eat and feel healthy and things like that. But we were going to get to stuff that has not aged well. And I think a numero uno thing is that classic cinema has many virtues, but diversity and sensitivity are not any of them.
Yeah. One of the movies that gets a lot of love, unsurprisingly, in this book is Breakfast at Tiffany's. And that's really all you need to say about that.
Another one is 16 Candles. Same thing.
Oy, yeah, that's right. Oh, got it.
Yeah, I went to what's essentially an 80s movie version of Jekyll and Hyde. So like a dinner show version of, and also like dancing and like interactive show of like an 80s movie for a cousin's bachelorette party. And it would have been fun, except they included an Asian stereotype as one of the characters.
Oh.
And I mean, God bless that actor. Bost bless that actor who probably just working on his SAG card and holding out for a big break, doing what you can, dude. But yeah, that was not cool. And it's a thing you saw a lot of.
It's also interesting looking at this book after the era of Manic Pixie Dream Girls. I mean, you say that phrase now and it's a guaranteed eye roll, and oh God, I hate those movies where like the quirky girl comes and saves the boy's life from boredom or whatnot. This is a book that celebrates all the women who came before the glut of Zooey Deschanel characters and paved the way for those sorts of characters. But it's pre-coining of the phrase Manic Pixie Dream Girl, and it's pre that being a bad thing. I would love to see the phrase pesky meddling girl come into the lexicon, and I would love to see more people embrace the fun and cool parts of this book.
Absolutely. I'm looking at this list of movies, and well, one, the writer who coined Manic Pixie Dream Girl regretted it almost instantly because of the way it was used. But all of these movies, the women in them, their motivations are independent of the men in them. They are in no way the, you know, I am finger quoting Manic Pixie Dream Girl, because they all have singular motivations. Maybe not Xanadu because she's a muse, but it's still really pretty to look at.
Yeah, and that's kind of the whole point of Xanadu anyway.
Yeah, don't...
It's Olivia Newton-John and ELO, and it looks pretty.
Yeah, turn your brain off for that one. As far as inspiration goes, you know, classic movies, there are worse things. I am so glad that younger readers nowadays have a more diverse body of movies to pull from. I, for one, cannot wait for A Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah, I am so excited. And yes, that is classic movies for you. Like, the music bits are kind of the same way. It's very white and it's very heteronormative. And when we talk about our read-alikes, I think we'll talk about some ways that new books and newer authors have kind of addressed those things and made this kind of, like, third-wave fun feminism more inclusive.
Yeah, this book is also 17 years old, and Jennifer Brandt wrote it when she was 24.
Exactly.
So she was probably like 22, 23 when it was in production. Her sister was 22 when it came out, so she was 20 when she was shooting it. And then the artist was only 17.
Yep. So this is all around the age I was at this time. I was 22 in 2000, and I know that my media consumption was, you know, very white, very heteronormative, very much like, here are all the old white men that I'm supposed to listen to and read. Here are the white women who are approved in the canon. You know, don't question it, just read what you're told and like what you're told.
I have a list of all the flicks I'd recommend and my all-time favorites from the time. And a little bit of backstory. I had a friend when I was in 6th, 7th grade who was really into 80s movies and also got me really into 80s movies, which was, you know, for a kind of quirky girl growing up in the late 90s in Schlimmity Boom, not such a bad thing. And, you know, I love the music. I love the colors. I loved the fun that there was, and it felt more accessible than movies that were aimed toward teens back then, because that was the era of like She's All That and Drive Me Crazy and 25-year-olds playing 14-year-olds.
Yep.
Which, I mean, there were literal 40-year-olds in Greece, but
yeah.
But it was different. Like, I don't think we were ever supposed to believe they were teenagers. Like, that was, it was like a comic operetta. Not. So let's list all the flicks you'd recommend I rent. It's Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Girls Just Want to Have Fun, Teen Witch, Rags to Riches, A Midsummer Night's Dream, A Journey Through Fairyland, which is an anime, and Austin Powers 2. My all-time favorite flick is My Fair Lady and Ever After.
Oh my god. Now, how many of those would still make your list?
A Midsummer Night's Dream. This is the like 1999 version with Michelle Pfeiffer and Kevin Klein. It's right. So weird, but it's so good. And if you've read Wise Children by Angela Carter, I like to picture this as the modern version of the Midsummer Night's Dream movie they make in that book. It's so weird, but it's so beautiful to look at. And if you were like a 13-year-old who was really into Brian Froud, that was the dream.
Mm. Oh, wow. Yeah, I can see teen you being really into that.
Very shortly after this, I discovered Labyrinth, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and Velvet Goldmine, like all in the same winter.
Oh, my God.
It was all done. It was over. Like, there go the last lingering shreds of my heterosexuality.
Oh, man. Yeah, Labyrinth as sexual awakening stories, I think all of us of a certain age have. I was just the right age when it came out. I remember watching it in 1987 at a sleepover and the feeling starting to awaken. That followed by the same friend who introduced me to Labyrinth introduced me to Phantom of the Opera, and like, thanks for introducing all of those like dynamics into my world at a young age.
So when you were about 13, 14, like, what movies were influential for you? Like, what was touching your heart?
You are so in luck because I have a book right here.
Oh my gosh.
I have a journal like right next to me. This fill in the blank journal called My Life and Nobody Else's. And it was written by Delia Ephron, sister to Nora, sage to all.
Awesome.
Yeah. And I filled this out when I was 13. So you're going to see like my favorite movies at that time. Field of Dreams, Home Alone, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, and Beauty and the Beast. Yeah, very, very mainstream. Like, my favorite TV shows were pretty much, like, everything on TGIF and 90210.
That's an 80s child for you. Mm. I'm like, oh, you grew up in the late 80s.
Yeah.
But that's awesome.
Like, my favorite books were War Between the Classes by Gloria D. Miklowitz, Tell Us Your Secret, which we have talked about on the podcast before. Mm-hmm. My favorite authors were Gloria D. Miklowitz, and Anna Martin.
Aww.
And my favorite musicians were Boys to Men and R.E.M.
It's amazing.
So you can see, like, there's this little bit of Weird Carrie that's starting to peek her head out. Weird Carrie, who would go on to be, like, obsessed with R.E.M. for a very long time. We just celebrated Mike Mills' birthday a few days ago.
Aww.
The fact that I still know this and will never forget it. But yeah, you're right. It's very much like I was born in 1978 and I was a girl. It's like so by the book.
Let's see. I only had movies listed, but if you'd ask me, like, what were my favorite books, I would probably say Girl Power by Hilary Carlett, which is a little bit of a spoiler for later. Mm-hmm. Girl Goddess Number 9 by Francesca Block. Everything that was out at the time by Francesca Block. Yeah. Although I kind of had a love-hate thing for the Dangerous Angels series at the time. It was weird. I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
I really like The Late Great Me by Sandra Scopitone.
Oh my God. Was that the alcoholic one?
That was.
I read that one so many times.
I did too. And as for music, Tori Amos and Ace of Base. Oh, and hi, readers and listeners. Yes, I know. Ace of Base are Nazis.
Are they really?
They are.
God, I mean, that doesn't surprise me, but...
They also replaced the women with younger women.
Ew. No, thank you.
That's gross. No, so F that. There's like a million other Eurobeat songs that are not made by Nazis, I hope.
That's sad, because I've always liked singing The Sign with you at karaoke. I guess we will have to find a new karaoke song.
I can say that one of my other inspirations, who is also one of Jennifer's inspirations, was Cyndi Lauper.
Oh my God. The Cyndi Lauper fandom in this book made me so happy, because I was exactly the right age for Cyndi when she hit it big with She Is So Unusual. I was like 6, and all I wanted was to look just like her. And I thought it was achievable because I had red hair.
I mean, it's still achievable. You just have to get some frilly skirts and a lot of makeup and pose in front of a graffiti wall. I'm sure we can make all of that happen between Hollywood Mirror and Boys Town.
We can put in the show notes the cover that I did of He's So Unusual, which Cyndi covered and then, of course, named her album after.
If you have a chance to watch 12 Deadly Sins and then some, the collection of her music videos, which I watched at a sleepover the entire way through when I was probably in 7th grade. I mean, that really shaped my aesthetics.
Mm-hmm.
There is so much weirdness, so much glamour. That last one, the Hey Now Girls Just Want to Have Fun, sparked a love of drag, which is, it's very complicated. There's a lot to talk about it. I am a cis woman. I am not up for it. This was my past. And drag was the first place I saw femininity that I had any hope of achieving. Because being beautiful like a teen girl was not in, you know, my power. I didn't have a face like Hilary Duff or Avril Lavigne. But I could look like somebody. I could wear rhinestones and big eyeliner like in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Mm-hmm. I wish that I had had a little more of that to look toward. Besides Nikki and Chrissy Taylor.
Yeah, I had to go digging for it. I have a lot of very beloved VHSs.
Oh, that is
I'm
awesome.
Sighing because I was wondering if your book was by Amy Krauss Rosenthal before you said it was by an Efron.
Yeah.
And I started looking at her titles and...
Oh,
yeah. Anyway,
Amy, readers and listeners, if you don't know about Amy Krauss Rosenthal, she was amazing and we lost her this year. And she was a Chicago resident and the city of Chicago has done a lot to celebrate her and to carry on her very magical and whimsical legacy.
She was definitely a pesky meddling woman.
Absolutely. And we can put some information about her and some of the cool things she did in our show notes.
So Carrie, we talked about some of the things that were not so great. Let's talk about the good stuff, because there is so much good stuff in this book.
There really is. One thing that I love, since we were just talking about music, and of course that's something that's huge for me, there's a whole section about how to be a record nerd and how to learn more about music, and that, yeah, girls can be as big a record nerd as boys can. And it's not necessarily even about impressing the boys. There's a little bit of that, but there's a lot of, you know, learn cool stuff. And that's like, that's a thread through the book that I love. Like, there is a lot of cool stuff in the world. As Jennifer Brandt says, like, you should never be bored. There's cool things to do and cool things to learn. I loved reading her makeup tips and beauty tips and fun stuff like that. Oh, that's exactly what I was about to say.
It's aged so well.
Yes.
Everything in here is something I would advise teenagers, like, nowadays.
Exactly.
All the things about makeup, all the things about beauty. I mean, there's a little bit of judginess about girls who are allegedly fast, but, like, there was no getting away from that in the early 2000s.
Right.
It's just, we know better nowadays. Like, brush it off and know that, you know, stand up for your sisters, stand up for your brothers, and take care of each other, because it's a tough world out there.
Amen. And a woman.
But all of the one chapter I really love is about expressing yourself. Because it's something, she goes into lots more detail about it than a lot of contemporary books. And there are a lot of really cool contemporary guides to life.
Yes, I loved all of them.
I read so many of them. You probably read The Generations Before Mine, which I hunted down and am still hunting down.
I read yours too, because I spent a lot of my teen years feeling, as you did, that, you know, that kind of coolness and beauty was something that was unachievable for me. And so when I was in my early 20s, I kind of came back to a lot of this sort of stuff, and it happened to be at a time when teen culture was, like, very, very girly, very silly and fun, and even being, like, an old woman of 22, 23, I reveled in it, and I bought just as much body glitter as, like, any other 12-year-old on the block.
I have glitter eyeliner now. Don't let anybody tell you you can't wear it.
No.
Just be mindful of shedding your glitter on people, because they might have pets.
That's true. I have some excellent glitter eye makeup right now that I got at Ulta, and it's called, like, Unicorn Power or something, and it's perfect.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, but the beauty and makeup tips, and especially the things about exercise, her guide to exercising is find how you like to move. And if you can't, then put on Dewdrops in the Garden and dance around for an hour. That's exactly what I do. That's essentially what Koya, which is the kind of dance workout I go to. That's what you do. You breathe deeply, get in touch with your feelings, and dance to Beyonce. That's Koya. It's amazing. And then, like, when she talks about diet, she says, don't diet. Just pay attention to how your body feels. And if you break out after eating this thing, don't eat that thing. Substitute something healthier. And if something gives you a stomachache, don't eat that. But make sure you're getting enough protein and you eat breakfast. And that's all advice that's safe. And if something you need to, anything else would be something a doctor has to make a call on. You know, things about hair and makeup. It's experiment and have fun.
Yeah, clothing, same thing. Like, wear the clothes that you feel good in.
The one thing where I differ from her is, if you're dyeing your hair the first time, do not box dye.
Oh my God.
Have a professional do it.
Yeah, that was one of the things that gave me pause as well. Although, you know, the first time I dyed my hair was actually not that long ago, and I did do it myself, and man, was I purple for several days. And now I make sure that I have someone who is professional and also standing above my head do it.
Yeah, we are both curly girls, so we have a slightly different routine than is in the book. Mm-hmm. So washing our hair every day is, it's a nope.
Yeah, I read that part and I was like, yeah, you probably can tell that I haven't washed my hair in like 3 days because it looks good.
But it's like back then, when you if you had curly hair, what you did was put a ton of gel in it, like a ton. No, imagine more. And then you scrunched it and waited for it to dry.
Yeah.
So your hair was crinkly.
Unless you were a natural girl like me, and then you just let it air dry and walked around bumping into people with your giant hair.
I also had giant triangle hair, except I started doing braids and ponytails when I was probably about a sophomore. But, like, Carrie, you remember my giant hair.
Yes.
Then I cut it all off as a junior in college, and I haven't, like, this is late right now. It's the longest it's been in a long time.
Oh, that's funny.
And I'm probably going to cut it soon. But definitely, like, reading this, it's like, yeah, I do want to buy a pony fall because now my hair is long enough to clip one in, and I do want it. Well, I have to find out, like, what the shape of my new job is going to look like before I add color, but it's like, yeah, I want to add purple streaks because, you know, cool girls like Jennifer Brandt paved the way for moms to have purple and pink and blue hair nowadays.
Yes, I love that that is acceptable now in my line of work. All the moms have hair that's like cooler than mine.
I had just pulled up the section Jennifer's look, which is all about her then style. And what's amazing is everything she describes 17 years ago, everything that is in style and that you can find in stores nowadays, which is something she talks about. Like all the things you find in thrift stores now are what's going to be popular 15 years from now.
Yeah. And we've talked about that with other books. The fashion that we read about in these books from 15, 17 years ago has all come back.
Slightly after the very early aughts is a time we don't talk about in fashion. And this is what she was she wasn't rebelling about it because it was a very pure expression of who she was. But the kind of fashion she is talking about not capitulating to, it was a lot. Like, she talks about not wearing a boob tube and a miniskirt on a date. And we think, oh, yeah, because, like, miniskirts and tube tops are popular right now. It's like, no, guys, no. Like, you would not be comfortable if you wore what 2001 thought was a boob tube.
Yeah.
It was all very small, very tight, and very polyester.
I am so glad I was too old for that.
This is something that it's driving me nuts because, I mean, I hope I'm employed soon so I can just buy all the clothes. Mm-hmm. Everything that is like going out clothes now is what was going out clothes in the late 90s. It's all the same cuts. It's all the same fabrics. It's all the stuff I love because it's all sparkly and pretty, yeah, and glam rock. And I can't get any of it. So I have definitely, like, if I have a next paycheck, like part of it is going to new clothing.
Yay.
But I did want to read out the section about Jennifer's look because what we haven't talked about yet is Jennifer Brandt has such an incredible voice.
Yes.
In this book. And she is absolutely 100% purely herself. And if you look at her wonderful Instagram that talks about her zine days, it's like, this is all her. This is what she wrote like when she was writing the zine. Even the look of it is the look of the zine. And she had a circulation of 10,000. I have seen an issue of Pesky Meddling Girls on eBay once. Nobody is giving up those mm-hmm. copies. So she has very devoted readers.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't even seen them in zine libraries. So anybody who has copies has not done anything with them. It is my sincerest hope that there is a reprint coming, and that's why she's teasing the Instagram. But I'm just really happy she's sharing all of it with us.
Agreed. It's been really fun the last 2 days, just taking a look at the Instagram account and checking out all the cool artifacts that she has saved and that she's sharing right now.
So there's a section called Jennifer's Look. Today, I'm going to call my visual statement Glam Bohemian Hippie, Stevie Nicks, Marian Faithful, New Wave Milkmaid, 1923 meets 1973, Edwardian Rock and Roller Chic. Here is a list of fashion items I'm currently worshipping. Huge Bakelite bracelets, Rock Band tees customized by moi with rhinestones, my hair is natural color for the first time in 10 years, Frankenstein-esque platform boots, Native American turquoise jewelry, wearing the colors red and fuchsia together, Moroccan patchworked and mirrored fabrics, Lenny Kravitz-inspired bell-bottoms, wearing tacky scarves as ascots, Cher circa 1969, new wave high-heeled booties in loud colors, cloche hats from the 1920s, anything with flared fairy sleeves or a handkerchief hem, fitted 80s blazers covered in new wave band buttons, a long black cashmere scarf stolen from my dad's closet, original 1970s vintage clothes from my favorite designers, Ossie Clark, Vivienne Westwood, Yves Saint Laurent, Chloe, Biba, and Gunsacks. That's everything I see on Madison Avenue when I'm walking to 42nd Street. That's everything that's in style right now. It's amazing.
That is awesome.
So the thing about things being in style, it means it eventually trickles to plus sizes. Yes. And that I might get a hold of them.
Yeah, I was going to say that actually, because that is fresh in my mind because I went clothes shopping today, that maybe by the time you get the new paycheck, it's going to be available in plus sizes, and then we'll both get to buy all those things.
Right. Carrie, how would you describe your style?
Oh, God. That is a really great question. I don't know. I mean, what would you say?
About you?
Yeah. What would you say I wear?
I mean, 1923 means 1973 glam bohemian hippie. That kind of fits you.
I like that. Yeah, like, I do what you can when you have big hips and big boobs and also teach little ones all day.
So you have to cover up things so they don't pull body parts out of your clothing. I've been there.
Yeah. Oh, also just you get everything messed up, so you can't wear anything too precious. Like, a lot of black t-shirts, a lot of band t-shirts, like, especially if they are bands or projects my friends have worked on.
Awesome.
I like to promote people with my chest. What about you? What do you call yourself? Fashion-wise.
So I love wearing long over lean styles, a lot of skinny pants, a lot of interesting geometric cuts, and a lot of shiny fabrics. So very, I mean, when you say modern, you think of like that whole new wave health goth thing, which I'm not super into. Sports clothes kind of make me think of gym class, and that's a trauma I'm not ready to talk about yet. So very universal standard meets prem meets Eli Tahari, who does incredible things with textures and lines, but does not do plus sizes. You know, I am only 4'10", so I try to make the most of all the inches I have.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I watched Velvet Goldmine and Labyrinth at crucial ages, so that love of glitter and elaborate fabrics and cuts has stayed with me since. I think that this book was definitely an inspiration for a lot of that, especially being a teenager in the early aughts when, you know, we don't talk of that fashion. We don't talk of that makeup. And if you love it, you love it. It's just that it was a kind of beauty that was applicable to a very small group of people and didn't really allow for variation. And that's not fun.
Yeah, agreed. Well, I was going to ask, since we'll be releasing this at the beginning of 2018, and we were looking at this as kind of a, you know, self-help point the way to a brand new you in a brand new year kind of thing, what's something rereading this book that you want to bring into your life in 2018?
I want to take better care of my skin. There was an article that came out.
Spoken like someone pushing 30.
Yeah. There was an article that came out today, which is the past when this comes out, but I'll link it in the show notes, about how the year of skincare is dealing with the outside world and how you're preparing for a future that might not exist. And like, that hits a little too hard.
Ooh.
And the thing is, I do kind of fall back on being Italian and having good, like, I mean, aging well is, you know, a bullshit concept, but, you know, my relatives don't show their given age as much for white ladies because we have very oily skin. But that doesn't mean that the sun's rays don't affect us and that we don't need mm-hmm. to moisturize or to exfoliate. So that's something I should probably take care of. And she's got a lot of good, you know, really solid advice that holds up. Except for one thing for me personally, I am the only person I know that's allergic to Cetaphil.
Oh.
It's the gentlest cleanser, and it makes me break out like nothing yeah. else. It's so funny.
Oh, no. So is there something else that you can use?
Oh, there's plenty of things. I just get overwhelmed Lots by how much there is. And I think I just need to go to one of those Korean skincare stores in Lower Manhattan mm-hmm. and talk to somebody who's an expert. How about you, Carrie?
I'm going to look at the chapter on setting the scene, which is about, well, for the teen girl, for your bedroom, or for me, the box known as our apartment. There's a lot of great stuff about our apartment. And then there's just the fact that it's very, very small and full of stuff, and that my husband and I are both messy people. And I would like it to look better. I have grand dreams of, you know, having all the cool kitschy stuff that I want and having it all on display and having all my records and all my books like available and on display and all the cool things that I find and want to make into other cool things that I can then hang on the wall. Like, I want to do more of that.
That's so cool. And if you do whatever you did when I visited you in Chicago, I mean, I loved your apartment.
Aw, thank you. Yeah, that was our last apartment, and it was bigger, so we had more room to play. And hopefully, our lease is up in May, so maybe what we want to focus on is less make this box pretty and more like, what can we do if we do move into a new place, which would be the dream. And the super magical dream would be a house. But we'll see if that happens in Chicago.
If I can make a recommendation for an online writer who does a lot of really interesting writing about space and how to take care of it. And she's on BuzzFeed, but don't hold that against her.
So are Jack and Tanner, and we love them.
We love you, baby bees. Bzz. But I'm not calling them the daddy bees.
I'm not letting daddy love me.
See, guys, if you listen to this podcast, you hear these shout outs.
Yeah.
No, we love you just the same.
Yes.
So Rachel Wilkerson Miller, who just came out with the book Dot Journaling, which is ostensibly about bullet journaling, but with the name I can say during interviews and not get strange looks and possibly security called on me.
Is she? Oh, she's The Room. I follow her on Instagram.
Yeah, The Room. Her writing is not just her listicles, because her listicles, they're good, but her writing is so good. And she writes about really heavy stuff sometimes and just makes it approachable. And like right now, it's a guide to the holidays, which will be past, but I think can apply to other big holidays. It's a guide about how to spend them on your own and still come out of it feeling okay. Oh my gosh, I'm going to be following everything she writes because I really, really like her.
Yeah. Oh, I can tell. I'm definitely going to enjoy looking at her writing just as I enjoy looking at her pictures.
So another part of the book, which is definitely inspiration for my next year, is it's called Putting on a Pesky Production. And for this, written for teens, it's what do you want to do that's going to guide you towards what you love in life and maybe make you some money. And I have been unemployed, more than employed this past year, and I got super squirrely. And I was also in a bad brain place, and I didn't even allow myself to do the things I love. So it's like, if I'm going to be underemployed, I might as well do things I love and take the time to develop them. Because I'm going to be 35, 40, 45, no matter what. Hopefully, knock wood. if it takes me until I'm 45 to get good at using Photoshop, I'll be 45 either way.
Exactly.
So something I'm very interested in, and readers and listeners who have podcasts, let me know if this is a service you would like. I love doing our show notes. It's super fun for me. I would love to do your show notes, and we can work out any kind of agreement you like. Like, we can trade advertising, we can, you know, trade other services. Like, let's talk about that.
Yes, take her up on it. Her show notes are awesome.
Thank you, Carrie.
It is a really difficult process figuring out not only what are the things I like that I can make money at, but also what are the things I like, can make money at, and can still love while I make money at them. Like, I don't like writing for money as much as I once thought I might. All the joy gets sucked out of it for me. But I love teaching, and I will, you know, spend a whole day working with kids and then, like, come home on the train and meet a three-year-old and make faces at her and, like, engage her in conversation the whole way home. So, and music is kind of similar for me. I will sing all day, and I will sing for pay, and then I will come home and I will be sad that there was an hour that I did not sing. Mm. As my friend Tess reminded me the other day when I complained to her, I haven't done anything musical at all today except for the 2-hour show I played.
You and Jennifer have lots in common, because I'm looking at the sentence here. It's, I find it rather annoying when people say to me, you got a book deal at your age? You're just so lucky. Like some leprechaun fell out of the sky and handed it all to me free of charge. Luck's got nothing to do with it, honey. Hard work, dedication, and research do. I spent every day for the last 9 years of my teen life promoting my pesky empire and getting my voice heard. And because I know you do so much hard work with your music and with theme stock and all of the people therein. You know, you come home from the kids and you get online with the kids.
Yep. There's always the kids.
Is there anything else we want to say? I mean, there's so much I want to say about this book. It would be hard to cover it all in one podcast. You want to talk about section about boys? Like, Jennifer, I hope you and Randy are still... I know she married a really handsome dude, and they have a gorgeous house in the Hudson Valley covered in books. And they run a bunch of cool businesses together, including one she has where she curates and styles books and libraries.
What?
That's incredible. Oh my gosh, you are so smart to think of that, Jennifer.
Can I just be her?
Yeah. Can I be your intern? Like, you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't care that I'm 30. You don't have to pay me. You don't have to. I will just work on that for the love of it.
Yeah, we can talk about the boy part. I'm looking at the list of qualities a leading man should have.
Do you want to read it?
Yeah, let's talk about this. A clean-cut persona, an open mind, a fuzzy boyfriend cardigan that he drapes around you on chilly nights, a trustworthy nature. Mom taught him to always treat you like a lady, and he actually listened. An extensive knowledge of punk and jazz music. Great friends who you dig spending time with. Buys you girly gifts often. Has a set of Hot Wheels, but drives slowly with you in the car. Not afraid to dance at parties. Makes sure no one bumps into you at concerts. Respects your house rules. Makes you laugh till you have to pee. And we've talked about this on the podcast before. That last one is, like, the most important and remains the most important, I think, no matter your age and no matter who you're looking to spend your days with.
Absolutely. And, like, looking over this list, Hannah's, you know, hitting all the marks. There's a couple things, like boobs. Yeah, the book is pretty heteronormative, yeah. But that was just what books were back then.
Exactly. I gotta say, Neil's really good at making sure no one bumps into me at concerts. That is something that we do a lot, is go to shows, and he knows that I have like terrible social anxiety and crowds are a huge trigger for me. So he is super cool and conscious about helping me kind of keep my little bubble around myself at shows.
That's so sweet.
But yeah, he knows nothing about jazz. Luckily, I do.
Yeah, I'm the one that shoves my way through crowds for in front of Hannah. We're kind of like a Chihuahua and a Great Dane.
Oh.
No, better yet, a Corgi and a Great Dane, because yes. I'm the crowd rustler. And like, if you look at a Corgi run, that's how I run.
You're definitely a Corgi. Wobble. Oh my god.
I'm fine with that. I love Corgis.
I love Corgis too. Good... They're the best.
If we're talking about cats, she's a Savannah cat, and I'm a Munchkin. Yeah, no, these are all wonderful qualities, and a thing that she reiterates over and over is that the person you date has to respect you.
Yes.
And has to respect your boundaries. And even when she's talking about having a best boyfriend, she said, if you see him having feelings, be kind and nip them in the bud, and don't let him, you know, distract him, essentially. Like,
yeah.
Be kind, but don't let him push your boundaries. And that's wonderful. Nobody was talking about that back then.
Yeah, this is her taking on the thing that would later be known as the friend zone and saying, like, the friend zone means that you are a friend and friends are nice.
A zone full of my friends? That sounds amazing.
I know. I imagine that it's like Discovery Zone and there's a ball pit.
Oh my gosh. I love the Discovery Zone so much. My favorite thing would be to bring my stuffed velociraptor, Vanessa. And
okay, a minute to take that in. All right. Proceed.
When they say kids are never like that, in middle grade novels, oh, they are like that.
Yes, I
was
known those
one of
kids.
Them. I really love the section she has called Girls, Please Do Make Passes at Nerds Who Wear Glasses. Because this was before, like, toxic nerd and geek culture. It existed, but it wasn't the zeitgeist it is now.
Right.
And, like, yeah, love all nerds. Nerds are amazing. As long as they're respectful and kind, like, they're wonderful. Definitely date them.
Yay, nerds.
Yay, nerds. And yeah, no, I'm a nerd. I'm a geek. I'm all of those things.
Absolutely. Although, like, Neil and I have a running conversation for the last 17 years about how we're never quite geeky enough for the geeks. Like, we can always be out-geeked. Like, even on the things that we know a lot about, we can always be out-geeked, and it's like, do you accept that, or do you hang your head and say, well, I will just never know enough?
I feel like that sometimes about young adult lit.
Yes.
Because I read a lot, but I can never read everything. And I have my interests, and I tend to stick to them. And that doesn't mean not reading diverse books or only reading a certain, like, kind of book or category. Like, mm-hmm. No. It means, like, some stuff that's out there I'm just not going to get around to. I think we've sort of broadly hinted at some of the books we're not going to cover.
Mm-hmm.
And we appreciate that you love them. Like, we just, you know, we've got our other stuff to do. And it's much better for us. And, you know, tell me if I'm putting words in your mouth. It's better to help an author sell a book and talk about what we love than to, like, tear somebody down when it might be somebody's favorite book. If somebody's like, the line I've always taken with me from Ella Montgomery, and it's from Emily Climbs, and that's when her favorite mentor tells her, after she writes a very satirical article, satirize evil, but pity weakness. And
yep,
that's something I've just carried with me.
Yeah.
This week we're covering a book called Life is a Movie Starring You.
My grandfather was known for saying, never take from any man his song. And I try to think about that for those same reasons. And you know what? If we are not covering your favorite book, I say you cover it. That would be the pesky meddling thing to do. cover it and tell us all about it so we can shout you out and so we can listen and enjoy too.
Yeah, tag it. If you've got a really good case and a microphone, tell us and maybe we'll have you on the show.
If you've got a really good case and a megaphone, stand out in front of our windows and scream it at us. No, don't do that. That's the opposite of what you should do. So, Marie, do you have any last thoughts about this book? I know there is so much more to say about it.
I think this is a must read if you have love for classic film culture, if you've ever felt like a square peg in a series of round holes, if you've read Weetzibat, and she 100% like mentions Weetzibat is a direct inspiration. And she said that Francesca Lea Block wrote her dedication to her, like when she was signing her book, it's to Jennifer, who is very Weetzy, and 100%.
Aww, that is awesome.
We're probably going to have to cover that book sooner than later.
Yeah. It has to happen.
If you just want to have fun and reminisce about being a teenager for an afternoon, or if you didn't really have a good teenhood and you want to have a good now, there's lots of advice in here and just lots of joy that, you know, even reading this as an adult, it's fun. And the resources in it are great. Going back, there's a bunch of books I want to read. A Girl Like I by Anita Loos, by the way. My brother 100% recommends it. He loved that book. He wrote a paper on it in college.
Oh, wow.
How about you, Carrie?
I don't know that I have anything else to add to that. I was so glad to revisit this book this week and to read it not surreptitiously in the aisle when I was supposed to be shelving the last of the Babysitter's Club book, but like when I could really enjoy it. And even at my advanced age, it was a lot of fun to read. And I think there's lots of good stuff to come back to and take with me. So do you have a read-alike for this book?
I do. And it's Queen of the Oddballs by Hilary Carlip. Hilary Carlip, I had mentioned earlier, wrote Girl Power. She co-authored The Zine Scene with Francesca Lea Block. She lived a marvelously eccentric life in Los Angeles in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, and has lots of amazing stories to tell about her brushes with fame, the incredible people she worked with, coming out, becoming herself, and being comfortable with who she was, and in the end, how she ended up falling in love. It's an amazing book, and if you love all the glam Hollywoodness and originality of this book, you will definitely enjoy that one.
Oh, is this the book that has the Carole King story in it?
Yes.
Yes, I read this book when I was laid up on the couch for an entire summer with a broken ankle, and this was one of the brightest spots reading this book. It was so much fun. And I think I did it at your recommendation. Surprise.
Probably. How about you, Carrie?
Well, my read-alike is any one of the Rookie Year books that have come out. Now, if you don't know Rookie, it's an online zine that takes its inspiration from stuff like this and from many other, like Sassy Magazine, as we've talked about before, is a huge inspiration. The Francesca Lea Block books, any mid-century culture and Riot Girl culture and just current teen girl culture. It's run by the phenomenal Tavi Gevinson, who I don't even think is human. Like, talk about getting things done and like having extra hours in your day, clearly, because no one should be able to do as many things as she does. But
another teen maven, yes, with a deep love of nostalgia for culture that came before her.
Yes. So cool. Another teen maven that I want to be when I grow up. But the yearbooks are print collections of the best of each year of Rookie's existence. And they also come with just gorgeous photos and like fun little things like stickers, and they're just really nice keepsakes. They are very yearbooky in that. And like the things that we brought up as being problematic about this 17-year-old book, they're things that have changed in the last 17 years, and I think you'll see a lot more diversity in every possible way in the rookie writing.
If you are a younger reader and listener, I would go with the later books first, because looking at them, they are definitely pitched more so towards the teen audience. If you're an older reader and listener, read the older two, because they turn more towards their older fans. And looking at they are in issue 76, which means they've been at this for 76 months. That's incredible. And they are still going, and they've got wonderful articles up. And yeah, Tavi, thank you for creating this space for teenagers.
Yeah, and also teach us how to be you.
Right. Carrie, what are you reading this week?
I just picked up The Dark is Rising by Susan Cooper, because it is December 20th, 2017 is we're recording this. And I'm really excited that there is a giant read-along on Twitter starting today of the book The Dark is Rising. I haven't read it in a while. It's one that escaped me in my childhood. But if you like creepy Christmas, and you know we do here at Go Your Own YA, I recommend it. What are you currently reading?
It's called Under Her Spell. It's three novellas in one by the wonderful Bridget Essex, and it's about a witch who falls in love with a shapeshifter and how they spend the pagan holidays together.
Oh, wow.
Its elevator pitch is, what if love was magic? Which I just love it. It's very cozy, and it's one of those rare winter solstice stories. It's just nice to have that.
Readers and listeners, you can get in touch with us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. We are at Go Your Own YA in all of those places. And we love to hear from you. Send us comments, send us compliments, send us critiques.
Somebody should send us a picture as either Beach Boys or Trains. Because there's a prize involved. We're going to extend it, I think, to the end of January.
Yeah. You want to win a prize, right?
New year, new you, new prize.
Yeah, get in touch with us. We would love to hear from you. And we are so excited as we come into this new year that, you know, you have been listening and enjoying what we do. And I'm excited to see where the new year takes us.
I'm really excited for Friendduary.
That's a bit of a tease. Good things are going to happen soon.
Soon in the future. If there is a future, if there isn't, and you're listening to this in the post-apocalypse on a 12 megabyte MP3 player that you salvaged from the wreckage, hi there. We hope this made your day a little bit brighter.
And we hope your skin still looks fantastic.
Readers and listeners, this has been Go Your Own YA. I'm Marie.
And I'm Carrie. Do something good for yourself.
And better for your skin.
And bad for the patriarchy, and worse for its skin. Make the patriarchy break out. Goodbye.